He was a terrific vice president. He knows what it takes to rescue an economy, beat back a pandemic, and lead our country.
Michelle Obama tells why she supports Joe Biden as the next U.S. president. This is Wednesday, the 19th of August, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, President Trump has his say on the start of the Democratic National Convention. New Zealand's prime minister hits back at the U.S. president. The World Health Organization says when COVID-19 vaccine is ready, it must be distributed equally. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Democrats appealed for party unity Monday as they reached out to voters across the United States in the first night of a virtual convention that will name their nominee for the November election. Former Vice President Joe Biden and running mate Kamala Harris, a senator from California, will get the party's nod later this week. And as Mike O'Sullivan reports, the televised event is intended to generate excitement as the election campaign enters its final phase.
An unprecedented event for extraordinary times, a social media gathering and television gala hosted by Hollywood star Eva Longoria Bastón. There were reminders of the racial tensions that have divided the nation, from the mayor of Washington, D.C., among others.
It was here that just weeks ago, Americans donned face masks and safely and peacefully protested the death of George Floyd.
There were the usual trappings of a convention, but the audience was remote, and most testimonials were pre-recorded, including one from former First Lady Michelle Obama.
I know Joe. He is a profoundly decent man, guided by faith. He was a terrific vice president. He knows what it takes to rescue an economy, beat back a pandemic, and lead our country.
Crucial for Democrats who hope to oust the incumbent, support from progressives who rallied in the campaign around Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders.
We're facing the worst public health crisis in 100 years. And the worst economic collapse since the Great Depression. We are confronting systemic racism and the enormous threat to our planet of climate change. And in the midst of all of this, we have a president who is not only incapable of addressing these crises, but is leading us down the path of authoritarianism.
Also important, support from moderate Republicans and independent voters. Former Ohio Governor John Kasich is backing Biden.
I'm a lifelong Republican, but that attachment holds second place to my responsibility to my country. That's why I've chosen to appear at this convention.
Less than 3 months before the election, the challenge for both parties, creating excitement for the candidates during a pandemic. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Meanwhile, President Trump has stepped up his rhetoric against Joe Biden as the Democratic convention got underway. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani has that.
First in Minnesota.
Joe Biden is the puppet of left-wing extremists.
And then Wisconsin, which was to host the convention.
Biden is just a Trojan horse for socialism.
The president aggressively counter-programming Biden's big virtual show, even knocking that part of it, calling the convention's taped speeches a snooze. The locations were telling. The president visiting Midwestern battlegrounds, as polls show him trailing Biden fewer than 3 months before the election. That kicked off his busiest week of campaign travel since before the pandemic. Sagar Magani, Washington.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. China's president urges his country to take immediate action to curb what he called its shocking and distressing food waste problem. Three Vietnamese suspects are arrested in coronavirus-related fraud targeting U.S. citizens. A former CIA officer is charged with giving China classified info. China fires another shot at its bitter trade and diplomatic dispute with Australia by launching an anti-dumping investigation into imports of Australian wine. Pakistan's army chief visits Saudi Arabia amid reportedly strained ties. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern hit back Tuesday against U.S. President Donald Trump for saying her country is experiencing a big surge in COVID-19. Libby Hogan reports.
New Zealand's leader Jacinda Ardern hit back at U.S. President Donald Trump on Tuesday for saying New Zealand was in the grip of, quote, a terrible upsurge in COVID-19 cases.
Obviously, I don't think there's any comparison between New Zealand's current cluster and the tens of thousands of cases that are being seen daily in the United States.
Trump's comments have started an uproar in New Zealand. Just 13 new infections were confirmed in New Zealand on Tuesday, taking the tally of infections to nearly 1,300 since the pandemic began, whereas the United States have recorded more than 5 million cases. After brushing off any parallel between the two countries, Ardern added that she doubted people would be fooled by Trump's comments.
Look, I think for anyone who's following COVID and its transmission globally, will quite easily see that New Zealand's 9 cases in a day does not compare to the United States' tens of thousands, and in fact does not compare to most countries in the world. I'm not concerned about people misinterpreting our status.
New Zealand has fared far better than most countries during the pandemic, but an abrupt resurgence of COVID-19 last week in its biggest city, Auckland, prompted the government to extend a lockdown.
That was Reuters' Libby Hogan reporting. Federal officials are facing a parliamentary committee over a cruise ship scandal that fueled Australia's coronavirus crisis. More than 2,500 passengers were allowed to leave the Ruby Princess without being tested after it docked in Sydney in March, despite suspected COVID-19 cases on board. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The Ruby Princess was the source of one of Australia's biggest coronavirus clusters. It led to 28 deaths and more than 1,000 infections across the country and overseas. Senior officials from Australia's Border Force and Agriculture Department, which had staff on board the cruise liner, are expected to face tough questions from lawmakers in Canberra. They're investigating how and why 2,650 passengers weren't tested for the virus despite suspected cases on board. After completing an 11-day cruise to New Zealand, travellers were allowed to disembark at Sydney Harbour and catch public transport and domestic and overseas flights home. A parliamentary committee was set up in April to examine the government's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. It's due to complete its final report in June 2022. A separate New South Wales inquiry into the Ruby Princess has blamed state health authorities for inexcusable mistakes. They had declared the ship to be low risk, but the inquiry found they should have tested sick patients immediately. A police investigation into the scandal continues. New South Wales State Premier Gladys Berejiklian says monumental mistakes were made.
Can I now apologise unreservedly to anybody who suffered as a result of the mistakes that were outlined in the report undertaken by individuals within the health department? Not only have lessons been learned, but clearly those circumstances should and will never happen again in New South Wales.
Following the Ruby Princess debacle, about a dozen other cruise liners were banned from docking at Australian ports due to the risk of spreading the coronavirus. Australia has had about 23,500 confirmed coronavirus cases. More than 420 people have died. The centre of the public health crisis is the state of Victoria. It recorded 222 new cases Tuesday and 17 deaths. State Premier Daniel Andrews has previously described COVID-19 as a cunning and wicked enemy. For VOA News, Phil Mercer, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, a magnitude 6.6 earthquake struck the Philippines Tuesday, killing at least one person and damaging roads and buildings, including a hospital and a sports complex being used as a novel coronavirus quarantine center. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. The World Health Organization Tuesday said that we are nowhere near the levels of immunity we need to stop the coronavirus from transmitting. Speaking in Geneva, Mike Ryan, WHO Health Emergencies Executive Director, said the international community needs to focus on what we can actually do now to suppress transmission.
And we need to focus on what we can actually do now to suppress transmission and not live in hope of herd immunity being our salvation. Right now, that is not a solution. And it's not a solution we should be looking to.
During the news conference, WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus set out their advice for the distribution of a vaccine for the new coronavirus when one had been developed. Tedros said steps needed to be taken to prevent vaccine nationalism and promote appropriate and fair use.
For this reason, WHO is working with governments and the private sector to both accelerate the science through the ACT Accelerator and ensure that new innovations are available to everyone, everywhere. In phase one, doses will be allocated proportionally to all participating countries simultaneously to reduce overall risk. In phase two, consideration will be given to countries in relation to threat and vulnerability. Frontline workers in health and social care settings are prioritized as they are essential to treat and protect the population and come in close contact with high mortality risk groups. If we don't protect these highest risk people from the virus everywhere and at the same time, we can't stabilize health systems and rebuild the global economy.
Several different organizations worldwide have been attempting to develop a vaccine to tackle the spread of the new coronavirus, with more than 170 vaccines in development, seven of which are currently in large-scale efficacy trials.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Starbucks Corporation, South Korean unit, is scrambling to curb the spread of coronavirus there, cutting seating capacity in its cafes and delaying a promotional campaign after 50 cases were linked to one of its stores outside of Seoul. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. This is Business Scene. I'm Ira Melman. Beijing's popular shopping area, Taikoo Li, has become home to the first Shake Shack to open in the capital city of China. Almost 200 fans of the New York burger brand waited hours in line for the grand opening of the burger restaurant. Young Fan, a Beijing resident, is especially excited about the opening after having had Shake Shack in the United States.
I tried the Shake Shack burgers when I was in the United States, and they tasted delicious. I don't have the chance to go to the U.S. anytime soon, so when I heard about Shake Shack opening a restaurant in Beijing, I was very excited. I came very early to queue up.
With growing tensions between the United States and China, the future of American businesses in China are not certain. However, Chinese customers of Shake Shack and other American companies still plan on supporting their favorite American products amid tensions between the two countries.
Although we are Chinese, we should not discriminate against U.S. brands because it has nothing to do with its people. As long as the food is delicious.
This is now the second Shake Shack to open in China, with the first opening in Shanghai in 2019. The capital city of South Korea, Seoul, is on the cutting edge in safety measures to slow the spread of COVID-19 with the first smart shelters for bus stops. The high-tech bus stop shelters are equipped with several features to make it the safest option for public transportation. 10 advanced facilities have been installed in the northeastern district of Seoul, costing 100 million won, about $84,000 each. All units not only protect against the novel coronavirus, but also against rain and heat. Kim Wong-yun, district government official in charge of the Smart Shelter Project, explained how the shelters operate.
People get their temperatures checked using thermal imagery cameras before entering, and the door only opens when the normal temperature is confirmed. An ultraviolet air sterilizer, medical facility grade, is installed inside. Almost 99% of the germs and viruses floating in the air inside the shelter is eliminated to be prepared for the prevention of infectious diseases like COVID-19.
Kim Ju Lee, a 49-year-old housewife, is using the new bus stop for the first time.
My temperature is checked upon entrance, and I feel certain about my health. I feel safe because I've had my condition checked and because I know others have gone through the same process.
With all the measures taken, hand sanitizer and face masks are still required, in addition to keeping at least 1 meter apart from others. Users are also welcome to free Wi-Fi services within the shelters for their convenience. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
We continue with VOA Asia. More than a dozen rockets struck Kabul, Afghanistan Tuesday, wounding at least 10 people, including children, prompting some foreign embassies to order a lockdown, according to officials and sources in the Afghan capital. Reuters' Francis McGuire reports.
This was the moment a rocket struck the Afghan capital, Kabul, one of more than a dozen to hit the city Tuesday. Officials said at least 10 people, including children, were wounded and foreign embassies went into lockdown when the attack took place. A government spokesman said 14 rockets landed in different parts of the city and were fired from two vehicles. Witnesses say they heard at least four rockets land near the Green Zone, the diplomatic area home to many embassies and NATO's headquarters. This man says he saw a rocket hit a residential house. What can poor people do, he asks. We only want peace. The identity of the attackers is unknown as of Tuesday afternoon, though two suspects have been arrested. Just hours before, Afghan President Ashraf Ghani had attended an event in Kabul to celebrate the country's Independence Day. The attack also comes at a politically sensitive time for Afghanistan. The US is encouraging peace talks between the government and Taliban insurgents, while also preparing to withdraw the last troops to end almost 19 years of war. Last week, the Afghan government released Taliban prisoners the militants wanted freed before they would agree to start peace negotiations.
That was Francis McGuire reporting. You're listening to VOA Asia. Up to 40 million Americans are in danger of being evicted from their homes by the end of the year, a direct result of the economic slowdown and massive job losses caused by the coronavirus outbreak. VOA's Julie Tabo has more.
Millions of Americans who lost their jobs due to the pandemic are facing eviction as the deadly virus continues to wreak havoc on the U.S. economy.
Whether or not I am evicted is the difference between life and death for me.
Tiana Caldwell knows that feeling well. She lost her job and was in treatment for ovarian cancer when she and her family were evicted in 2019.
We were doing good, and then I got cancer again. So I was actively in treatment when we were being evicted. It was a bad experience. Help
me! Unemployed and barely able to pay rent, Caldwell is organizing protests with KC Tenants, a group advocating for affordable housing in Kansas City, Missouri. Like most of the country, the state was already experiencing an affordable housing crisis when the pandemic hit. And now, almost 50% of renters in the state are at risk of eviction because they can't pay their rent. Many Americans have been receiving financial assistance through state and federal unemployment benefits. But the supplemental federal assistance of $600 a week lapsed in July, putting millions in jeopardy of being unable to pay their bills and facing eviction.
So people are about to be in the depths of a crisis unlike anything we've seen before.
Housing rights advocates are calling for rent relief and an extension on eviction moratoriums, an issue that was recently addressed by President Donald Trump.
I'm signing an executive order directing the Department of Housing and Urban Development, HHS and CDC, to make sure renters and homeowners can stay in their homes.
In a press conference on August 8, the president announced an executive order to provide assistance to renters and homeowners and protect Americans against eviction. But according to housing experts, the executive order provides no clear directives for any entity to do so. Attorney Gina Chiala encourages landlords to negotiate with their tenants whenever possible. But with 40% of the nation's rental units owned by mom-and-pop landlords, many cannot absorb the losses from unpaid rent.
It's unprecedented times right now for our association because we are getting constant calls by worried landlords that are worried about losing their not only their rental homes, but also their homes.
North Carolina landlord Kathy Phillips relies on her 10 rental properties for income. One tenant has been falling behind on her rent.
She's a single parent, and I don't feel comfortable evicting a single parent in this climate. I offered her the 50% off her rent for 3 months with no expectation of paying it back. And you've got to be empathetic.
It is time to stand up.
Tiana Caldwell would agree.
Both times that I was evicted, it felt like a personal attack because it's like, well, what did I do that was wrong? You know, what did my family do that was wrong because they wanted to take care of me?
Julie Tabo, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA Asia. Robots can do heavy, repetitive work and never tire, but they still cannot approach a task with the intelligence and judgment of a human. Now there's a hybrid solution, a wearable robotic exoskeleton that gives humans superpower. Matt Dibble has the story.
Though it appears to have marched straight out of a superhero movie, the Guardian Exo exoskeleton is ready for work in the real world. It's a wearable robot that amplifies its user's strength.
Anybody who's wearing the Guardian Exo can lift up to 200 pounds. It really augments your strength, your performance. You move the way you normally would move, so if you were to go to grab something to lift it, it responds to your movement and gives you that strength to do that activity.
The Exo carries all the weight and transfers it through its legs to the ground, making 90 kilos feel like only 4.5.
Whether you're big, strong, small, man or woman, you can do the same task.
At a recent demonstration, audience members experienced how an Exo arm gives them super strength.
Whoa.
Keep going.
Oh my God.
Strapping in takes only a few minutes, and once on board, the exoskeleton responds to the user's body movements.
So this robot is very intuitive. It follows me, does what I do. I don't have to think about it.
We have something we call get out of the way control. What this allows is any operator to jump in and actually just move the way they normally would, and the robot is constantly getting out of their way.
The first exos will find work in the military and the airline and construction industries.
The second most common reason for someone to miss work is back injury. They're getting injured while they're lifting heavy equipment, while they're doing repetitive tasks, and the exoskeleton can take the burden from the operator through the exoskeleton and eliminate that injury.
Though the Guardian Exo would be useful for chores around the home, for now it will be going to industries that can afford the $100,000 per year rental fee. For VOA News, Matt Dibble, San Francisco.
Our thanks to you for joining us, and our thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Take care of yourself, stay healthy, and enjoy the day ahead.